Good evening, everyone. If you would, go ahead and leave your Bibles open to the book of Proverbs this evening. Our lesson will be, I'll just say this. All of the verses that will be read this evening will be coming from the book of Proverbs. If you see and you look at the title slide, you immediately see the thoughts for the lesson this evening are going to be coming from it can be described as the power of language. And I think that is something that you and I can wrap our heads around. We understand the power of the words that we use. Whether we use them in written form or whether they are given orally, our words have power. And the whole idea that I have behind this lesson is that we understand the power behind our words. There is a positive power, there's a negative power. And what I want us to take into consideration that when we think about language in general, we're talking about our method of communication. We're talking about the fact that it is just that, whether it's spoken or whether it is written, it consists of the use of words as a structured and conventional way of communicating with one another, isn't it? I told Cindy this evening before I left the house, I'm teaching on the power of language, which is don't use too many words tonight. And I'm not real sure that I intend to use very many words other than what is written in the Scriptures. I want us to take into consideration and keep those things in mind that whether we are writing them out, and we have so many different avenues today where we can communicate, it's not like used to be you had to almost be face-to-face with someone in order to communicate with them. You could write a letter to them, and it could be delivered to them that way. We see that even in the New Testament with epistles as they're being written. But most communication used to be done face-to-face. That's not the case anymore today. I would venture to say that more than 50% of our communication now is done online. We don't communicate face-to-face. I remember growing up as a child, hearing the commercials on television, the old Ma Bell commercials, talking about let your fingers do the walking, and communication was done over the phone. It wasn't done face-to-face. And as we've grown, our culture has grown, and our technology has grown, we've gone from the corded phone at home to the wireless phone at home, to now we carry phones in our hands, and the phones in our hands today, the cell phones, I'm not too sure that they're used for verbal communication as much as they are used for the written communication of places like Facebook and Twitter and social media in general. What I'm trying to say in all of this is that we need to be careful with the words that we use, whether we're talking to someone face-to-face or whether we're talking to someone online. I will say this, there are a lot of things out there in the world today, especially what is communicated on social media, that sometimes I raise an eyebrow because it's a person that is supposed to be a child of God, but what they're saying is so negative that it makes me wonder if they really are. And it's not to say that they're swearing or cursing or anything like that online. It's just that I can't believe you said it that way. Sometimes what we realize, too, when it comes to communication and the language that we use, is the written word is often more misunderstood than the verbal word when we're talking face-to-face with somebody. And again, what I'm saying is be careful. And what I believe is true in Scripture is that God tells us that our words are powerful. And what that means is that they're powerful, then there is significance behind those words, and we need to be careful then how we do that, how we use them. And so I want you to take into consideration this evening some things that are found within the book of Proverbs about the power of language. And I want you to look, when you think about those first six verses there in Proverbs, is the way that were read, and you think about what all is involved in them, because the Proverbs are a source of wisdom, aren't they? You think about Solomon and what he wrote and the wisdom that came out of him, but they also reveal a proper fear of the Lord. Verse 7 of that very same chapter that was read, verses 1 through 6, the very next verse, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. But it's a source of that instruction for us, that wisdom, that instruction. The Proverbs actually even teach us in many ways to respect and keep God's commandments. And it gives us, especially in the first 8 chapters, it gives us some guidelines for parents or fathers speaking to his children on what they need to do to listen, to obey. And then you think about the book of Proverbs, it can be used as a training guide for godly living. Many of the things that are found within it are, I would say, just common sense. And yet, they're profound. They came from a wise man, and he saw exactly what needed to be done. So words are our vehicles for thought, aren't they? They become sure indications of who we are. And from the very moment that we use them, people know who we are. And so it really benefits us as children of God to consider very carefully the words that we use. And so there are four things that I want us to consider this evening. The first of which are words well said. A word that is well said is an asset. Sometimes that word is going to be very, very positive. It's going to be uplifting. But it's going to be an asset to any person, and usually an asset on any occasion. And so I want you to consider some things that are found in these four verses right here, these four texts, Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 21. Now, I will tell you that for the sake of poetry and the way that it reads, I'm going to be reading, doing something different. I'm going to be reading straight from the Old King James this evening. I normally preach out of the New King James. But these verses are going to be coming out of the Old King James. And I just, because of the way that the English, Old English language reads, I just like it in these verses. But Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. I think that what we realize, sometimes we don't realize, is the destructive nature of the words that we use. And sometimes maybe we do because we intended them to be used that way. But there should be life in the words that we use. As children of God, what we should be trying to do with our words is lead someone to Christ. And when we are oftentimes as negative as we can be, that turns people away. We want our words to be an asset in order to be able to draw others to Christ. So it says, they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. Now let me put it this way. Kind words are beneficial words, aren't they? Critical words, on the other hand, do what? More often than not, they tear down a relationship. I'm not saying that critical words are unnecessary to be used, because criticism can be used in such a way that it does build up, doesn't it? But the way the world views criticism today, more often than not, they think, oh, you're just trying to tell me what to do. All you're doing is bringing me down, as some people would say. But if we are talking to individuals in such a way that they are feeling that we're encouraging them, then we have a fruit that they want to partake of. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 20, the tongue of the just is as choice as silver. The heart of the wicked is of little worth. I think when you think about the way that we speak, he's describing it here as a precious metal, but are our words precious to those that we'd speak to? Proverbs chapter 25, verse 11. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. Again, the preciousness of the words that are being used right here are those that are to be valued. And I think about those, and then Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 24. Pleasant words are as a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones. Now, consider that for just a moment. Which would you rather hear from someone? Great job. Or, you know, you're a loser. Which ones would you rather hear? Pleasant words are a honeycomb. How many of you have ever eaten honeycomb? How many of you ever had the pleasure of doing that, and you know the sweetness of the honey that comes from the honeycomb? You know the benefits of eating honey, don't you? The health benefits that come from it. You know, they always say that when you move to a new area, you should buy local honey so that you can start building up resistance to the bad things that are out there, to fight off allergies and things like that. Well, there's benefit to it. Sweet to the soul and health to the bones. And let me suggest something. It's sweet to the soul, and not just healthy physically, but it's healthy spiritually for those individuals. And so words that are well said, they're refreshing. They're life-giving. They're encouraging. They're edifying. They're strengthening. They will build you up, and they won't tear you down. But then there are words that are poorly said. Those words that are poorly stated are oftentimes, when we think about those, that those are the ones that are destructive. They're a detriment to any person on any occasion. They're the types of things that when you hear them, immediately the person's ears become closed to what you're trying to say. One of the phrases that I have been guilty of using in my own, and I think I'm going to try my best never to use it again except as an example of what not to say. Actually, there's a couple of them. When you're trying to convince someone of something, especially young people today, and this is one word that I cringe every time I hear it, and like I said, I've been guilty of saying it, calling a millennial a snowflake. That's not meant to be kind by any means, a stretch of the imagination, is it? Whether you're trying to convince them politically or spiritually, and you call them a snowflake, what's going to happen? They're going to turn away from you. They're not going to listen to you. That's a destructive word. And then I hear also, and I've done this too. I've been guilty of saying this myself also. And I've heard brethren use this, calling people mindless sheeple. And I understand what they're trying to say. They're not smart enough, I guess, to figure out what needs to be done. They're following people mindlessly. But again, when I hear language like that, I wonder, is that the kind of language that is going to bring some type of nourishment to a situation, or is it going to be destructive to the situation? You see, you can go even further than that and understand that sometimes these words have a power, words have power to deceive. When I think about words that are poorly stated, Proverbs chapter 5, verses 3 and 4. For the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. All flattery will get you everywhere and nowhere at the same time. Especially when the words are dishonest and meant to deceive you. Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 21. With her fair speech she caused him to yield, with the flattering of her lips forced him. Deception. And I realize that this describes those who end up going off after the lust of the flesh, the personal desires. But you think about the words that are used in that. It's destructive to the soul. It's destructive to relationships, especially married relationships. But these words also not only have the power to deceive, they have the power to cause rejection. They have this, some behind it, or there's self-aggrandizement behind it, and then it becomes ugly and to everyone concerned. One man used the word when he was describing some things that were repugnant to him. And sometimes our words can be repugnant to another individual. The proverb writer says it this way in Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 2. Let another man praise thee, not thine own mouth, a stranger, and not thine own lips. In other words, don't blow your own horn. Let someone else do that for you. It's real hard to stay humble sometimes. But really what we're thinking about is we don't have to brag. I'm watching a basketball game yesterday. I watched several basketball games yesterday, but one in particular. Before the game that I really wanted to watch, I was watching the Seton Hall and Kentucky basketball game. And I have to tell you, there's one thing that I really despise more than anything when watching sports, is after a player hits a big shot or does something, he has to show off. He has to grab his jersey and pull it out like this, or he has to pound on his chest and act like he did something great. Yeah, he did something at the moment. That's fine. But you don't have to brag about it. You don't have to show off to the crowd. It's something different. It's different to, you know, I think it's a little bit different than being excited, but you take excitement a little bit too far. See, we communicate sometimes with things other than words too, don't we? Communicate with in ways that we try to draw attention to ourselves. And here, Solomon says, let another man do that. Why don't you let your teammates come up and chest bump you or high five you or something like that, and instead of you showing out that way? You know, everybody talks about end zone dances. I remember Billy White Shoes Johnson was one of the first ones for the Houston Oilers. Get up there and do a little dance in the end zone after a touchdown. And now you see all types of things choreographed after a touchdown. But our words. And it's we live in a world where one-upmanship, we feel like we have to do it. I've got to apologize to my mother-in-law. I did that to her today when we were talking at lunch. I one-upped something she was said, and she pointed it out to me at the time. I wasn't trying to do it on purpose. But isn't that true when we start talking stories and we've got one that's better than the one that was just told, we have to talk about it? Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 32, if thou hast done foolishly in lifting up thyself, or if thou hast thought evil, lay thine hand upon thy mouth. I remember a preacher saying this, and I'll probably repeat this in this lesson. A wise person knows how to use words wisely. And what that means is he knows when to speak up, and he knows when to shut up. There's power in our words. We've already read a verse that talks about words fitly spoken are like apples of gold lined with silver. But again, you think about the power that is in these words, because they have the power to recommend, they have the power to commend, and they actually promote honesty. I think about those things because what they do is they bring that nourishment that to the situations and circumstances behind them. They enrich that time that we're communicating with one another. In Proverbs chapter 10, verse 20 and 21, the lips of the just is as choice silver. The heart of the wicked is of little worth. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for want of wisdom. And then you have the fact that they bring honesty to this situation. Righteous judgment on our part. And they can be a preventative measure, and they can either delay or avert trouble altogether. Proverbs chapter 12, verses 14 and 15. A man shall be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth, and the recompense of a man's hands shall be rendered unto him. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth to wise counsel is wise. A man shall be satisfied with the good by the fruit of his mouth. Think about that. Think about how we communicate today. Think about how we are If we're truly trying to reach the lost, do we seem like we have been raised in the objective case and the kickative mood all the time where we're complaining or criticizing? Or are we willing to use those words fairly, honestly? Are we trying to prevent trouble, or are we trying to cause trouble? Words fitly spoken are such that, I'm not saying that we have to be positive 100% of the time, because there are times when you think about it, when it comes to the gospel, we're supposed to reprove and rebuke and exhort. So we're not always going to be 100% positive with everything. Sometimes some things are going to come across negative. But if we're using the Word of God properly, and we're using our words properly, we're going to find out that we're going to be able to draw more people to Christ that way than if we are just trying to tear things down all the time. And fourth, I'm trying to listen to the advice of my wife, not use too many words this evening. Words wisely stated. What they do is they never overstate the cause or the case or exaggerate for effect. I mean, how we love hyperbole, don't we? Hyperbole is one of the most overused figures of speeches in our language today. If I've told you once, I've told you a million times. Have you ever told anyone anything a million times? Especially your children, because that's who you generally you state that to. And you talk about the fish that got away, and the story starts out. It starts out this big, and then it gets this big the next time you tell it. Just be careful. These types of words are devoted to accuracy, the words wisely stated. They're devoted to honesty, and no matter what the occasion or the circumstance, honesty is always the best policy. The proverb writer in Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 25 says this: "When he speaketh fair, believe him not." And now listen to this: "For there are seven abominations in his heart." And he's talking about somebody that's not speaking fair, whose heart is covered by deceit. His wickedness shall be shown before the whole congregation. What is he saying? He says, your words, the words that are being used, they're going to uncover how dishonest you actually are. So that what we need to be doing is we need to be using words that not uncover dishonesty, but reveal just how honest we are. Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 28. "Whoso diggeth the pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth the stone in it will return upon him. A lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it, and a flattering mouth worketh ruin." Now, do you see what I've done here? I'm using negative to try to show us what the positive should be. I want to throw in one more verse. I don't have it up on the screen here. Proverbs 13, verse 3. "He that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life." Really, this could be the conclusion to just what I've just said in those previous two verses. "He that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life, but he that openeth wide his lips shall have destruction." I remember my mother, as a teenage boy, I don't know, she might have told this to me a million times, I'm not real sure, that it's better to keep your mouth shut and to be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. You know, I still have trouble with that sometimes. Solomon, "he that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life," is describing again that individual that knows when to keep his mouth shut as well as when to open it. But a wise man knows when to speak and when to shut up. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 24 and 25. "Because I have called and ye refused, I have stretched out my hand, and no man regarded But ye shall set it not, have set it not all my counsel, and would have none of my reproof. And you think about this, the wise man would accept correction. The fool will not. Proverbs chapter 28, verse 23. He that rebuketh a man afterwards shall find more favor than he that flattereth with his mouth. Again, the power of our words, the power of language, can be used in such a way that when it's given correctly, correction doesn't seem like you've been browbeat. Correction in such a way that benefits an individual more than just telling them how good they are. You know, sometimes it's just that. It's always nice to hear job well done. It's always nice to hear attaboys. It's always nice to have the pats on the backs and the praise of others. But right here, sometimes he that rebuketh a man afterwards shall find more favor than he that flattereth with his mouth. And the person that can actually accept that type of correction benefits from it and appreciates the person that gives it because they were doing it honestly and straightforward versus just telling them what they wanted to hear. I want to give you a few more verses along this line. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 23. He that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is a folly and a shame to him. Again, knowing when to speak up after hearing what you need to hear before you speak up. Because one of the biggest issues that we have in communication and the use of our words is we rush to interrupt. It's time to sit back and listen to what other people have to say before we interject. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 5, which was read a little earlier, but I'm going to read from the Old King James. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain to wise counsels. It means that in order to get that far, you're going to have to listen to some wise words along the way. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 19. In the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. Think about how words can get us in trouble. How words can lead us to sin. But think about this. Then when we bite our lips, when we bite our tongue and we refrain, are we actually saving ourselves and helping our own souls when we do that? Proverbs chapter 17, verses 27 through 28. He that hath knowledge spareth his words. Oh, man. Don't you just hate it when somebody just runs on and on and on? Being concise sometimes is better than being long-winded. A man of understanding is of an excellent spirit. Even a fool, when he holdeth his place, is counted wise. Even the fool, when he doesn't use all the words, doesn't take up all the time and dominate the talk, the speech, is considered wise. And he that shutteth his lips is esteemed a man of understanding. Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 23. Whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from troubles. Sometimes in our lives it's going to be better to shut up than to speak up. And we have to know when. See, the book of Proverbs provides us with so many things. I imagine that I'm going to put together a few more lessons here before it's all over with out of the book of Proverbs. And the wise counsel that is found within the book of Proverbs is just that. When you go back and you read the introduction, those first six verses, and understand that we can gain wisdom, we can gain understanding, and through that, we actually learn that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. but it's knowledge of Him through His Word. The proverb writer says this in Proverbs 15 and verse 4. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverse lips therein is a breach in the spirit. Remember that. Let our words be just that to the people that we communicate with. Let them be a tree of life. Let them be such. Let us use our language in such a way that God is glorified all the time. Let us not leave a doubt in the minds of those that we speak to, who we are and whose we are. And let those words be a tree of life to them. Let those words draw them to Christ. Let those words be words that actually cause them to ask questions and say, ultimately say, how can I have what you have? How can I have what first century Christians had? And show them. Because how we communicate, there is power in the language that we use. Now, if you're here this evening and you're subject to the Lord's invitation, we encourage you to do those things that will reconcile your life to the Lord. And if we can help you in that, we stand ready to assist you. Prayers for those who are believers that have strayed from God, reconcile your life to Him this evening. And if you need baptism for the remission of sin, we can help you with that and assist you with that this evening as well. There's power in the words of Jesus. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And He will do that for you this evening. Won't you come as together we stand and as we sing.